It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, mental health issues like anxiety and depression can make many workplace tasks increasingly difficult. We talk about how to navigate work while dealing with your mental and emotional well-being. First, President Biden issued an executive order this month that would require the Federal Trade Commission to place limits on how technology manufacturers can restrict repairs. What does this mean? The short explanation is that when your cell phone or appliance or high-tech piece of farm equipment breaks too early in its life, you might have more access to the tools to fix it, or that independent repair experts could do the job. That could mean you won't need to buy a new one, so there's less waste and lower cost for you. For people involved in the right to repair movement who've been advocating for legislation for about a decade, this move from the president gives some hope. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like it's gotten more difficult to repair things, especially expensive things like electronics, appliances, smartphones, tractors, you name it? Would you like to see more ability to repair shops to be able to get the tools you need to repair your own stuff? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nathan Proctor heads the Right to Repair campaign with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG. Nathan, thanks a lot for joining us.
So great to be here.
Nathan, we might think of our smartphones as something that's close to home when it comes to right to repair. What other kinds of things, expensive things, are out there that manufacturers have made tough for ordinary people or independent repair folks to repair?
Yeah, I mean, just about everything that is made has like significant barriers to repair. And we see these tactics put in place, everything from toasters to tablets to tractors to even medical equipment. In fact, the ability to fix ventilators became a huge issue, you know, at this time last year when we were just starting to, you know, kind of ship all these ventilators from the national stockpile to hospitals all over the place. And they didn't have the materials they needed to get them up and running. This is something that basically there's two kinds of products now, products that are made so poorly that they cannot be fixed, and then products that are made well enough to be repaired, but you can't because the manufacturers deny access to spare parts, service materials, or other critical materials to get the job done.
There is another model out there, and that's cars and auto repair. And I know high-tech cars are harder for an ordinary person like me to repair at home, but independent repair shops have access to some of those things. Can you talk about that model as an alternative to what we see for that long list you just gave us?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great example. I mean, there's still problems, you know, that we would like to see addressed with car repair, but your local mechanic who's, you know, not affiliated with the manufacturer, is not a dealership, can access the materials necessary to do the repair, the instruction manuals, any kind of software tools. He can read the diagnostic codes. All of those resources are freely, you know, kind of available to that, you know, mechanic. They might be charge too much for it, or there might be other issues with that getting repair actually done. But the manufacturers are required to give that mechanic the information that, you know, that they ask for, or that they have to pay for it, essentially, actually, in the case of cars. And that was because that Massachusetts voters, you know, went to the ballot and approved a ballot measure in 2012, which was on a vote of like 86% to 14%. Which, by the way, is more Massachusetts voters than actually have cars, to require manufacturers to share critical information with their local mechanics. And so that started in Massachusetts, and it quickly became a national agreement. And I think it shows that it's possible to do. There's really been no downsides to it, except for, you know, I guess the manufacturers can't charge quite so much for repairs because they have to compete in an open market.
For consumers, whether we're talking about a 3-digit smartphone or a 6-digit harvester, do we end up paying more because only the manufacturer of this particular brand, they're the only ones who can repair our stuff?
Yeah, I think that we pay more in a couple different ways. One, when only the manufacturer can fix something, the price just jumps. And you know, I've seen many, many examples where, you know, there was just this example you know, in the auto trade press, I mean, speaking of car repair, where Tesla had quoted somebody $16,000 to do a repair on their car, and the independent mechanic was able to do it for $700. You know, and that's just typical. It's the market's not that competitive for electric car repair because there's not that many independent shops. So manufacturers can jack up the price. And the other thing that happens is that we replace products way faster than we would because you go, you know, you take your phone to the Genius Bar. I'm not sure how genius these people are, but they'll tell you, oh, it's going to be $700 to fix it, but a new one's only, you know, $800. You might as well do that. And that cost really adds up. I mean, we did a study and we found that Americans spend, you know, $1,400 a year per family on new electronics. And this is just way, way, way more than we have. This is a rapid escalation of how much we're spending on buying new stuff. And this is because things don't last and we replace them. And sometimes those costs might feel hidden, right? But this has become a significant drag on the American family budget.
Talking to Nathan Proctor, who heads the Right to Repair campaign with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, looking at a new executive order from the Biden administration on the right to repair, new requirements for manufacturers to make their equipment, their technology, everything from phones to harvesters and in between, more accessible for users to repair or independent non-manufacturer affiliated repair folks to repair. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions, maybe your experiences at 800-642-1234. Okay, Nathan, let's jump into this executive order from the Biden administration now. What does it do exactly?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's a couple things in there that are worth noting. One is that it's an official endorsement from the president that, you know, manufacturers should not be allowed to restrict access to repair. Second, as you mentioned, it encourages or calls upon the FTC to engage in a new rulemaking, which would mean new rules for, you know, the marketplace to consider. And finally, it actually instructs the Department of Defense to do an analysis of these issues in as it relates to military equipment, which I think will be quite important to you know, the overall efforts that we're doing. Like, you know, these issues, like I said, it's in all equipment. You know, you have tablets to toasters to tractors, ventilators. And yes, even the equipment that soldiers are relying upon, you know, in combat, you know, theaters across the world, they don't have access to the materials they need to keep it working in these critical situations.
Now, this doesn't sound like a huge game changer. The FTC is going to write up some new rules. Does something need to happen in Congress to really change the right to repair landscape?
I mean, so the way that we are looking at this issue is that there are multiple policy, you know, solutions that need to be addressed because there's kind of more than one issue at play. But, and, you know, the FTC has really not been as aggressive in either enforcing the rules or making new rules in a really long time. But it's really obvious if you're watching what's going on at the FTC that the Biden administration has a very different plan for this federal agency. He wants this to be a group that sticks up to protect, you know, local small businesses, to prevent dominant companies like Amazon and Apple from doing behaviors that really hurt, you know, kind of the more, you know, the small businesses in the local economy. And right to repair is one example, and it's featured prominently in what they're doing. So I believe that the FTC could be a really important part of this, but you're right. We have other kinds of methods we're trying to use to solve this problem. You know, one is we've been working to pass state bills that shore up local consumers' access to what they need to fix stuff. We had 27 states with legislation so far in 2021. There is a bill in Congress which would, you know, kind of create new national rules around, you know, making sure people have access to repair resources. And then there's also kind of other you know, legal problems around copyright, which we want to see resolved so that people can create, you know, basically third-party tools that would take the place of manufacturer tools without violating copyright, which we think is a mistake in copyright law.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Paul is with us in Menominee Falls. Paul, hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure. What did you want to tell us about, Paul?
Oh, this is such a great program. I'm kind of a fix-it guy, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but everything from these lighters that you use when you light the grill, these handheld lighters that you can't refill, and more importantly, as I told the person that was screening me, I have kids. So if you have kids, I have seen over the last number of years this kind of planned obsolescence in these products that they produce. They're hard to take apart. It's hard to find any parts for it. My father-in-law can fix absolutely anything, so we pass some things on to him, but I'm willing to dig into anything. And as far as families goes, it's really, I mean, if you, all you have to do is go around to some of these tag sales or rummage sales, depending upon where you are in the country, what they call them, and you just see a plethora of toys that are being tossed away that are really not damaged significantly, but something on them is broken, and they just get tossed out. And it's just in regards to consumer protection, frustration, the added income for parents.
I gotcha, Paul. Thanks a lot for the call. And Nathan, you'd said, you know, there's kind of two categories here, the expensive phones and more expensive stuff that is hard to repair only by the manufacturer. This is the other category you talked about, that sort of planned obsolescence, maybe cheaper things that are hard to repair, maybe again by design. Does right to repair affect those lower end goods, that kid's toy that it's cheaper to just buy a new one than try to figure out how to crack the thing open?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. So I think that there's a couple pieces that we want to really address with this campaign that's a little bit more than just, you know, getting access to the repair guide, right? Mm-hmm. It really is changing the consumer attitude about buying and throwing away things, right? To give people more of a sense of empowerment about how long stuff should last. I mean, Americans get rid of 416,000 cell phones every day. We have this incredible overstuff consumption, production, destruction machine. And I think right to repair is just one way to get people to kind of grapple with the idea that it doesn't have to be that way. We can have good stuff. It can last a long time. We can fix it when it breaks. You know, not everything has to be basically, you know, in and out and garbage.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to a right to repair advocate about the potential for new policy that can make it easier to repair rather than replace our high-tech, often expensive gadgets, from phones to expensive farm equipment. Nathan Proctor is with us. He heads the Right to Repair campaign with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had an experience where you wanted to repair something or get something repaired, electronics, appliance, equipment, whatever, but had to buy something new and different instead? Are you a farmer who's had this situation, an expensive piece of equipment, and you had to go to the manufacturer at cost to get that software update? Some farmers have gone to Ukrainian programmers to solve the problem. Is that you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about right to repair and what a new executive order can mean for easier access to things like instructions, supplies, and tools needed to repair your gadgets, big or small. Nathan Proctor is with us from the Right to Repair campaign at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about this concept of right to repair, what this executive order does and doesn't do? Do you have an experience where you tried to repair something and the parts weren't there, the ability to open what it wasn't there, the warranty information scared you out of it? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go back to our callers now. Gianni is with us in Montello. Gianni, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm enjoying the conversation. Yes, my question is the right to repair bill. The fact that we need such a bill in the first place, what does this say about capitalism in the United States? Or are we living in a industrial and corporate corporate plutocracy. I what say you on this? Are we really living in a free capitalistic laissez-faire society, or is there something going on under the table?
Johnny, thanks for the call. Do you have thoughts on that, Nathan?
Well, maybe a word of encouragement, right? There's a clear incentive for companies who manufacture things, try to lock in all the service revenue from the repair of those things or to force upgrades. And we've created a whole movement, a whole campaign, which challenged that status quo. It's reached all the way to the White House. It's all over the country. We're talking about it now. And when we win this campaign, perhaps we can, maybe that'll answer your question about whether or not we still have a democracy by the people, because I believe we do.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Jack now in Madison. Jack, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on the air. I just wanted to say, I think part of what's driven this, and I'm basically very approving of it, is YouTube, because people are now seeing through YouTube with these fix-it videos, they can actually fix things fairly easily if it's possible to access them. And I can give you a specific example. This wasn't from YouTube. I figured this out myself. Our refrigerator is like a $1,200 refrigerator. It quit working after about 3 years. I called. They said it needs a new circuit board, $350, repairs $200 to come out. Well, I investigated, and the fuse, the only thing that was wrong is there was a fuse on the circuit board that had blown. But here's what they did. Instead of the fuse being able to snap in and snap out the way most fuses do, it had been soldered to the circuit board, so you couldn't snap it in, snap it out, and replace it. And I don't know, maybe there's some engineering reason to solder it, but I'm doubtful about that. I think it's probably just a marketing thing to sell circuit boards. So you can get around this. I just got a new fuse for like 50 cents, and you can buy what's called a fuse cradle at like Radio Shack or somewhere. They're like a couple of bucks. And the fuse cradle has wires on either end, and then you just bypass the old fuse with the new fuse in place. But it was just frustrating that they would manufacture it that way. I don't know of any reason they would need to do that other than marketing.
Jack, thanks for the call. Let's get Jack's number. My fridge is pretty old. I might need some help pretty soon. But Nathan, does the right to repair effort get into something like that where, at least as Jack sees it, the piece is manufactured to make it so that the 50-cent piece wasn't going to be enough to repair it? You need to buy the 350 thing unless you're pretty crafty.
Well, that's a great call, and there's so many examples like that. But the truth is, if you know what you're doing, you can absolutely solder on a new fuse, right? I mean, but you need access to the schematic for the circuit board. You need to know exactly what the fuse is. And the manufacturers, one of the reasons why they do this, you replace a $350 part when a 50% part breaks, this greatly reduces the labor costs for the manufacturer for warranty repairs. Because now they go out and their technicians just pop out the whole circuit board and pop in a whole new one. Cost effective for the consumer, but the consumer doesn't control the super low manufacturing costs, you know, that the manufacturers do, you know, mostly overseas. So, yes, they have an incentive to do that, but the fix that was done, right, actually not only fixed the problem, but it made it a lot easier to fix the next time. And that's why the independent repair ecosystem is so critical for consumers.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Cheryl now in Eau Claire. Cheryl, hi.
Hi there. I have a car. I won't say the brand, but I just noticed condensation in my left front headlight. And I took it to my neighborhood mechanic, and he said, well, the lights all work, high, lows, et cetera, but it's $820. And then he has to go to the name brand garage part. He can't get, you know, whatever generic brand.
Oh, interesting point. We're a little low on time, Cheryl, but thanks for that call. Right to repair and this effort, Nathan, would it open up things for not somebody other than the manufacturer to make an off-brand replacement part for Cheryl's headlight?
Yeah. So the reason why you can't have an off-brand part in a lot of these cases is because there's software embedded into firmware, embedded software in the actual part, and it's illegal to copy that under copyright law. So we need some way that independent mechanic can just put in a generic part, install the manufacturer's embedded software, and hook it up to create some price competition for those parts so there's not the price gouging that we see.
Thanks for that call, Cheryl. And I wonder, though, Nathan, if I'm a manufacturer, I'm making this complicated product, I might say, well, hang on, I don't want just rando companies opening up our stuff. They're probably going to screw it up. And there might be safety and vulnerability concerns for hackable things if we let non-certified third parties under the hood. So this is there's a safety issue maybe here. What do you say to that?
Well, there's two things. One, you sold it. I bought it. It's mine now. I get to decide. Two, the FTC did a thorough investigation to see if there was any credibility to the claim that there was some safety or security or other problem associated with third-party repair, because it happens all over the society. So we have billions of examples of third-party repair happening all the time. And there was no evidence to support that it was a risk, but the risk associated with being price gouged or being forced to upgrade products unnecessarily, those harms are real.
And just our last few moments, Nathan, are you seeing momentum now with this executive order, with the efforts you talked about in Congress, maybe in some states? Is the needle moving on right to repair?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it certainly feels like this is a moment where the wind is at our backs. But, you know, we're not going to give up. We know that manufacturers would love for us to kind of peter out before we kind of got to the goal line, which is people actually have what they need to fix stuff. So we have to keep, keep our foot to the gas pedal here.
Nathan, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Nathan Proctor. He heads the Right to Repair campaign at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG. He joined us today to talk about a new executive order from the White House and what it could do for your ability to repair your stuff.